Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
They're taking mugshot this morning. So the idea is that people can't identify the voice, so they have to see a photo of the speaker. Oh, I know that guy. I've seen him around. Well, actually, the way of seeing a person is with hearing the person.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see my face if you want, but it's not going to get you anywhere. If you hear what I'm saying, then you'll know what a rascal I am. It will be revealed very clearly. So we'll proceed as we did the last time with an apology based on the rhetorical questions that were voiced earlier in the week. And last week, who's qualified to give the Bhagavatam class? Who's qualified to sit on the Vyasasana is what it really is. It's not who's going to give the Bhagavatam class, because, I mean, Prabhupada's giving the Bhagavatam class all the time, if you tune in. Although yesterday he said that reading is not as an efficient a method as hearing and repeating. Those are superior to reading, although reading is equated with hearing. And when we read, we don't just read the verses or the texts. We read someone's deep realization. And that's where these purports come in. They include guru, reference to shastra, and sadhu. Those are all the predecessor spiritual masters. So I thought I could confess, and that's an opportunity for me to confess. I think confession is very purifying. So I thought I should tell you that, you know, it's very difficult for me to chant 16 rounds. I feel completely disqualified. It's so hard for me to chant 16 rounds because the 16 rounds are completely bad. So I haven't been able to chant 16 rounds for years and years and years. I can't possibly get through the day without chanting 25. 16 is just not enough because the first probably 15 are deficient. I noticed that earlier in my devotional so-called career that I made a vow that I wouldn't take any prasadam until I chanted at least 11 rounds. Because I was very hungry in those days, so I would promote getting 11 rounds done because the last five were really hard. But I noticed that actually the last five weren't very hard. They were actually just about warmed up to chant rounds. And by the last two or three, then it seemed like I was maybe actually speaking with Krishna. But the first were just get them out of the way. So right now I chant about eight or nine extra rounds first. And then I start the 16 rounds on a regular day. Sometimes I have more time to chant. And I read incessantly, but it's just like pouring water through a sieve. It doesn't really do much of anything. But I read all the time. Yeah? And at least the sieve is relatively clean. At least by the time I finish reading. So it's supposed to be contained. Somehow, when I hear from others' realizations, if I hear them reading, a lot of reading goes on in this room. A lot. During class, people read. And you can see they have notes, or they're like stroking the glass, or they have their cards, or whatever. There are a few speakers who speak directly from their heart, and they're where the impact comes. So I brought a card, because I whipped this up for Mother Sukadi's birthday. I memorize verses by people's birthdays. So this is... Yeah, her birthday was September 4th, right? September 4th. And I was rereading chapter 9 the other day. Because I read a chapter every day, so I reread it a lot. And it stunned me. I was like, what the hell is this? I don't get it at all. I've read this hundreds of times. I don't get it at all. This Krishna's mercy. is that I don't know anything, but still Krishna keeps me around and sometimes gives me the privilege of sharing what little I retain with others who are eager to hear. Now this is the verse. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avaktamurtina natstani sarvabhutani natsaham te sarvastita. So if you listen carefully to the English translation, there are conflicts. As Mother Madhumanti brought up the other day, you know, there are conflicts. You have to accept it. If someone's wrong, don't accept it. If the scripture provides some conflict in your mind, then you have to iron it out. So listen to the English, and maybe you'll find the same thing that stopped me the other day. By me, Krishna says, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. But of course, we know the super soul is within them. So it doesn't seem, the terminology is a little obscure. What you think? Yeah, it could, but then if you read the purport, which that's your homework, all right, you can go home and read it. You have to read the next one and the next one also. They're kind of a bundle. A lot of Bhagavad Gita verses, they're in a bundle, three in a row, two in a row. So 9, 4, 5, and 6, they're really very similar purports and explains the logistics of Krishna's statement, manifestation. The term manifestation is used repeatedly. The manifestation is made up of this word mani, means manipulated, right? Worked by the hands. His hands are not directly in every circumstance, but his will is. And his will is more powerful than his manipulative skills. He doesn't manipulate. That's the reason. He allows everyone freedom of will. In other words, your minute independence. And then promoted by your choice of what you could predict to be a good result, or what you could predict to be a bad result, or what you could feel to be the transcendental will of the Lord flowing through your existence. You have your choice. And so he's not manipulating or manifesting everywhere, but his will is enacted. Okay, well, you can do that for homework. Now we go to the Bhagavad Gita verse. This is the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, creation, chapter 1, questions by the sages. Text 8 is on the screen. Yatatvam sammamap sarvam. Sorry? I think I said that before. I said it before I started talking. Didn't I? Yeah, she's listening. Sorry, but if you'd like. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Greetings to the planet of mantras, all right? Planet of mantras, the Hare Krishna temple, the planet of mantras, the loka, mantra loka. And we just say mantras all the time. Actually, in days of yore, that's how the Sanskrit scholars were, you know, people who communicated on a level of higher ideals, they more or less quoted slokas all the time. You can see it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahaprabhu will respond with someone, or respond with his own feeling by quoting a sloka, which is a mantra. All the slokas are mantras. Okay, here's a mantra on the board up there, okay? Sorry. You can say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya again, if you like. That's a mantra. It's supposed to bring the personality of Vasudev into the form. Right. Here, should we go? Yeah. He's impatient. That's his nature. Yatatvam samayat sarvam tatpatastad anugrahat bhuyu snigdasya sishyasya garavau guyam apota. Okay. Proceed to the word for word. Veta, you are well conversant. From your honor. Samya, one who is pure and simple. Hat those. Sarvam, all. Tattataha, in fact. Tat, there. Anugrahat, by the favor of. Guru, will tell. Snigdasya, of the one. Who is submissive. Sisyasya, of the disciples. Gauravaha, the spiritual masters. Uyam, secret. Apirita, endowed with. There it goes. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Definitely. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. Please repeat and direct your repetition in my direction, because this is an empowering verse. And if you bless me with this same concept, then perhaps I will say something of validity. And because you... Oh, you want to read it by yourself? Go ahead. You could go around asking every devotee like this today to memorize this verse, go from devotee to devotee and say this and see what happens. Get out of here! Okay. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The secret of success in spiritual life is in satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has sung in his famous 8 stanzas on the spiritual master as follows, quote, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Only by his satisfaction can one please the personality of Godhead, and when he is dissatisfied, there is only havoc on the path of spiritual realization. End quote. It is essential, therefore, that a disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. Srila Sita Goswami fulfilled all these qualifications as a disciple, and therefore he was endowed with all favors by his learned and self-realized spiritual masters, such as Srila Vyasadeva and others. The sages of Namasharanga were confident that Srila Sita Goswami was bona fide. Therefore, they were anxious to hear from him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Stapitanya Mahaprabhu, Adi Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The word snigda here is like, it's in the word for words, it's in the verse and the verse in the word for words. Snigda is that of one who is submissive. You want to look at it? Like that. Yeah. Okay. There it is. Of one who is submissive. So I thought, this is a familiar word somehow to me because of my repetitive reading. So there's this word is employed in the description of foods in the mode of goodness. It means fatty. So it's weird. Weird that you know. But there's another reference, a couple of references in the Bhagavatam letter, cantos of the Bhagavatam in the seventh canto. Let's see which chapter is that. Okay. I think 23. Near the end is a description of the duties of a wife. And that she engaged in activities with this term, which means affection. That she's engaged in affection. And then in the very first chapter, which is the last chapter of Canto 9, the chapter is entitled Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's a description of him. Let's see, that's also maybe text 64 from chapter 24. And there it's describing Krishna as snigdha. He's affectionate. He's affectionate. People can't resist both being affectionate to him and his natural affectionate nature. But in order to be effectively affectionate, then this phrase here comes into the definition. Of one who is submissive. So an affectionate wife is also a submissive wife. She submits. You can give your husband an argument, and he might like that. But actually, arguments are not the way that Rukmini Devi conducted her argument with Krishna. She completely accepted what Krishna said, and then she topped it off. You know? Krishna gave her all the ingredients. She bakes this cake, and then she decorates it with her purports. And you can look Krishna book, very charming exchange. It brought me to tears a couple of times. How here Krishna is playing with his wife and giving her a super hard time, and she's so submissive that she faints. Envisioning how it would be to live without Krishna is unbearable to her. But there's affectionate, it's an affectionate exchange. She's so submissive that she faints. Then Krishna is put in his place by her reaction, and he revives her and apologizes. And his apology is also like a real tearjerker. It's amazing. Yes, the Supreme Personality of God holding his loving wife and apologizing for everything he said. And then she doesn't accept his apology. She beats him. She beats him completely because she accepts everything. She goes back over point by point by point. And says, I agree with you, everything you said is correct, but the scripture also says this, and this also says this, and it reinforces what you're saying, it's true, it's all true. And there, you know, these are devotees. Devotees, Krishna's a devotee through his devotees. And a devotee, I mean, of course, the elevated personality of Rukmini, she's also a devotee, as well as a wife, right? And how she handles her henpecked husband. He's playing with her. She reacts with earnest in a reaction, physical withdrawal from the circumstance, of course, everyone familiar with the posture she takes. She falls over like a cut banana tree. And then God is put in his place. Why are you playing with me? Yeah, this is Krishna's play. But why? The pastime is there. Why it's there? It's there because Rukmini's purports surpass everything else. Everything Krishna says is correct. But there's more. There's more. Your own realization is more. And why do you have these realizations? Because Krishna's in your heart. If you are submissive. Another point, of course, in this verse is, besides the fatty, affectionate submissiveness. When I first saw this in the Bhagavatam about wives in the seventh canto, I thought, what the hell? I don't get it. It means fatty. Right? It means that the wife is trying to plump up the husband, make him fat. Right? Of course, you see that in some relationships. You know? In some cultures, the affection for the husband is fatting him up, right? Fattening him up. And that's how it should. The fatter he comes, the richer he is. The richer he is, the more the family is. And the more sedated he is, he won't run away. And the less attractive he is, he's not attractive to other women. You know, there's some hidden agenda in there, right? Anyway, it's all there. This submissive, fatty, affectionate. This is the affection where Krishna will awaken. He will reveal within your heart and mind and intelligence and your brain substance, which is scientifically mostly fat. You know that? According to the scientific analysis of your brain, it's a fat. Right? And it's submissive. It folds and bends when it's impacted by impressions from the ears and eyes and all the other connected devices to your brain. It makes an impression upon them. Right? So Krishna can awaken. He reveals himself into the heart of the devotee. That's why yesterday's verse is an essential understanding. That if you read, you have your own little isolated concept of what's going on. But when you read with others and they share their perspective, was it Monday? Talking about the preceptors. Krishna is the supreme preceptor. He perceives everything before you do. And he also reveals everything after you. I thought there was some linguistic connection between scepter. There's a scepter. This king holds this like a club. And it's called the scepter. And it gives directions with that. It is, in fact, related to perception. That the direction of the kshatriyas, the directions of the kings, is in the direction, if they're properly educated, in the direction of going back to Godhead. That conducting the activities of society in a way that's compatible with self-realization. There's a point also, another reference to Snigdha before I forget, here in the songbook, the Damodar Astakam. Stanza 5 there, that the Snigdha is employed there because Krishna is overwhelmed with the affection of his mother. Right? So this is such a compatible or congenial way of relating with the Supreme Lord. And how do we express our affection for the Supreme Lord? Through expressing our affection for his servants and serving him submissively in a way that expresses this need. We have a need. It's stronger than our need. And actually, stronger than our need to receive love is to give that. And if you give love, of course, love, what is that? Yeah, it's so twisted in the Western world that, you know, the word love, it's so inappropriately used most of the time that affection is far more accurate term to use, that when you express affection within it is love. And so by servitude and submission to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his bona fide preceptors, those who are preceptors on his behalf, those who are speaking on his behalf, those who are serving him in an exemplary way. For example, I should have apologized for embarrassing you at the beginning because I'm going to embarrass you. So, being a joker, in the line of jokers, if you look at Krishna's behavior, he's a prankster and a joker. And Narada Muni also, he's a probing troublemaker. And he has an amazing sense of humor. I'll give you one quick example, and that's Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj is completely fixed in his determination at Baal to go to the forest and become blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he meets Narada Muni on the path. And Narada Muni immediately tests him with a whim, joke. It's a joke. He says, "Hey, you're only five, go back home and play." And how does this wonderful person react? At five, he's so realized, so determined, that he says, "You're sage, you're supposed to be helping me. Why are you stalling me out on the path? Give me something that will enhance my progress and linking with the Supreme. I'm going. My goal, of course, he's going to get shards of glass. Right? That's what he's going for. But he's intent on it, and he knows that the source of all the shards of glass in the world, they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He accepted that from his spiritual master, his mom. His mom is a spiritual master. "Well, I heard, Krishna lives in the forest. Go there." "No, I don't know. Do that, try that." And then on the way, he meets very superior, like number three on the hit parade of the Parampara, Narada Muni, who stalls him out. And he corrects his spiritual master on the spot. "No, you're deterring me from my goal. Give me something that..." So it's not impolite to assert oneself, even in the presence of the spiritual master, in a submissive fashion. All right? "Isn't your job description enhancing my spiritual life?" "Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, that's right. I forgot. I was fooling around with you." Now say, "Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya." See, I squeezed it in again. This is the mantra that Narada Muni gave to Dhruva Maharaj. It's there throughout the Bhagavad Gita. There and there and there. Okay. Where was I going now? Oh, yes. Nice topic. Can we go to the verse in English? Although it's there, the word for words. It's pluralization of spiritual master. Spiritual masters. Right? Because your spiritual masters have bestowed this mercy upon you then. So this is a very essential point for making spiritual life, is that recognizing the potential of everyone with whom you interact to be one of your innumerable spiritual masters. Guru is not singular, it's plural. Although in some languages the word guru, the sound guru, I was thinking about this morning, it means conspiracy. So it has a very negative connotation. But then I thought, well, why would this word, the sound of this word, develop into this? And it's in a culture where the word guru means conspiracy, it's a culture of material advancement. Very, very vigorous spiritual advancement. So if someone interferes with your your material advancement, then they're conspiring against you. And that's what the duty of the spiritual master is, conspiring. And the whole predestination, it's a whole big conspiracy, not a theory, accurate, factual conspiracy, is that the purpose of the parampara is to destroy your material desire, not your material life. You can go on with that as long as you want, but if it will be undermined or defused by removing the desire for material advancement, and it's not done in a violent way, it's simply a substitution. Here you are, higher consciousness, higher goal, higher methodology, and higher understanding of the structure of the world and the structure of your existence. In this way, your material desires become insignificant, and your spiritual desire emerges. It re-emerges. It does. It's been there, but it's been covered over by layers and layers and layers of matter. I have a tendency to want to go back over the previous classes because I had some realization. So I thought I would go back, let's see, what was it? Last Friday, Tamaha Prabhu was talking about this wonderful verse about the limbs of a tree being severed and the useless purpose of watering them. And it's true. And the souls who have severed themselves from the tree of Krishna, Krishna's tree, the family tree, they're like lying on the ground. And then if you water them, nothing will happen. If you water a separate branch, nothing will happen. But if you're an expert gardener, and we have an expert gardener in our parampara, his name is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and so he can graft the branch to the Chaitanya tree. And you're the grafting process. You can pick up one of these severed branches. We ourselves are severed branches because even many from the 60s and 70s, they severed themselves from their immediate material family tree. They're no connection with anyone. And try to make it on your own and just dry up on the ground. But somehow they, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of the those who are employed in the nursery of Mahaprabhu, they were lifted up and connected to the Chaitanya tree, and then they thrive. The flowers come, fruits come, everything comes. If you need some scientific evidence, although I don't know if this forum really allows that kind of thing, but here we are in the state of Florida. There used to be the logo on your license plate, it was oranges. So the orange tree is very hard to spread from seed. It's not easy at all. But you can cut a branch off an orange tree and you can graft it to the beginning of the existing tree of a grapefruit. That's what they do in the state. Grapefruit sprouts very easily. They can grow a grapefruit tree quite easily from seed. And so they cut the branches from the orange tree and then they graft them onto the root trunk of a grapefruit, and then they become orange. It's miraculous, isn't it? Right. So we also, in our own way, we are severed branches, and the rest of the world is just like a burn pile. Right? If you go down towards town, you see this, they cleared this property, and there's three big piles of branches and trees just waiting to be burned or trucked away or something. But if we go out into the material world, and we see these branches, we can somehow connect them to the Chaitanya tree, Chandrasan tree. And that Chaitanya tree is rooted so beautifully in the spiritual world that when the water, the chanting process, the Harinam Sankirtan, the activities of spiritual life, they water the tree. The tree, of course, the root of the tree is Krishna. I can feel restlessness in the room. And I'm sure you have a lot of things to do in the world. I was going to put a few pads of paper and some pencils out, but I wasn't prepared to really provide that. So now I'll embarrass you particularly. As I noticed this one devotee come into the temple room today, I was thinking, this person is so, right on it. He respects this building and the other devotees completely, thoroughly. And when something's not quite straight or not quite aligned or a little out of place, he puts it in place immediately. No hesitation. It's not like, why doesn't someone put it in place? I don't remember. No feeling of that at all. Just immediately adjust to its proper location. And before touching anything, if you touch something else, desire to wash the hands. Desires the very pure-hearted person. And this is not a person who's always completely nicely, neatly ironed. Ah, sometimes sleeves are rolled up, covered with, you know, whatever, dust, dirt, whatever. So this person is Brahmin. Modern day Brahmin. The Brahmana is, what is it? Of course, everyone knows this one, but the practice has been misinterpreted. A Brahmana leaves a place cleaner than he found it. I was thinking of this one yesterday. That's why the Brahmana doesn't look dirty at all, because he leaves the place cleaner than he found it. Because he didn't touch anything. But actually, he may be completely tattered, like Sudama Vipa. He appeared washed, but at the gate of Dwarka with torn cloth, dirty. He's just a beggar. He's just a beggar. But wherever he went, he left it cleaner at his own personal expense. So here we are. This is Krishna's house. I mean, maybe we don't like to think of it that way. He does live here. This is Krishna's house. And when we leave, as we talk, I will beg from you. I was thinking a minute, 90 seconds, 30 seconds, probably 10 seconds. But 30 seconds, I will beg. 30 seconds, put things in place before you go. Right? If you use a plate, you can wash it and put it back. Right? If you find a spoon on the ground, you pick it up. Probably 10 seconds, but 30 seconds of being ambitious. You're using your seat, but then you toss it aside, right? You think you're putting it away like in a mailbox, but it ends up on the floor again. And someone else is following you, right? Or when I was traveling for more than 20 years with Festival of India, I would chalk the doors with little notes for this crew, right? One of my favorites was how to help out with Festival of India. It was four ways of helping. Right? And number one was stay out of the way. And number two was lead. And number three was follow. Because we encourage people to lead. And we encourage those who want to lead to follow. And this is what we do in general. And number four was stay out of the way. Because it's a big service to just get out of it for people. If people are really intent on doing something, if you can't help them and you can't give them advice, steer clear. But that's not the one I'm referring to. The other one was a multiple choice question, or actually it's an essay question. It's an essay question. And it was, who cleans up after you? And then the second part of the question was, why? Why does anyone clean up after you? Because no one cleans up after me, because I clean up after me. That's one of the answers. Everybody cleans up after me because I'm a slob. Or, I have no idea who cleans up after me because I'm oblivious. Or it doesn't matter at all who cleans up after me because I don't give a damn. Oh, that's good. This bridges to another point. This is the point. Well, let's look at the common denominators. I commonly do this. This is a very easy way to answer questions, right? An easy way to agree also. Not to disagree, accept, and then look a little deeper. So, what is the basis of our four regulatory principles? It came up in the class. The basis of these four regulatory principles is impersonalism. Rampant, deep-rooted impersonalism. These four. Of course, there's a fifth one. That's chant 16 rounds of again. That's personalism. The other four are exploiting yourself, exploiting others. That's what the exploiting is. So I'll give you an example. Gambling. I win. I don't care who loses. That's why it's impersonalism. The other person doesn't matter, doesn't care. Killing an animal, not a person. Not a person. Exploiting the opposite sex. Object of sense gratification. Impersonalism. Sense gratification in itself, that's why it's not condemned. The desire for sense gratification is condemned. And the person whose pursuit of life is sense gratification is condemned because it's impersonalism. When the goal of your life is something that isn't you. These senses, they're not us. It's impersonal stuff. Now, when you take a picture of me, that's impersonal. But when you hear, and I get into your veins somehow, under your skin, as the old song goes, right? I've got you under my skin. Krishna gets in under your skin. He gets way deep into your heart, right there. It's an insight. He's already there. And he can awaken deep realization for you. So it happens only to those who are sthita, you know, submissive, affectionate. Okay. And the plurality of the parampara will reinforce this. So I really don't want to inhibit your habitual desire to make comments, so you can feel free to comment to one another if you like. If you have a personal issue with me, and you can confront me right in my face, it's okay. I could try to hear you. I mean, I am tuned in a little bit, but actually people echo in the voice, and with a microphone, to me, it could be any language in the world. You know? So I don't know every language. I know a few, though. Okay, so yes, you have a comment. We'll try.
Thank you for your class, and I can tell you're an artist because you inject abstract points. For example, the one about when you talk about submissive spiritual, you know, everyone is your spiritual master. And I started thinking, I said, wow, well, the politicians, they plunder the citizens' money. So in a sort of perverted way, they're helping the citizens get materially frustrated, some of the citizens anyway, to get materially frustrated, and maybe they'll take up spiritual life. And it says in the Vedas, a lot of people come to spiritual life because they become frustrated, because they can't, they become frustrated because they can't make money or whatever. You know, so thank you for your class.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. But I would appreciate criticism.
Okay.
Artists can criticism.
You can take that any way you want.
The killer verse for me was Krishna stating in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says that practice yoga arjuna, which is the art of our life. And as soon as any place I see art, I'm dead. Right? So, yeah, the poetry, art, all the useless subjects, they're my forte. So it's hard for me not to go into the artistry of the writing. Yes, Prabhu?
I was thinking also that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, the 434 verse, with approaching a spiritual master submissively, submissive inquiry. And then because it says gurus here, plural, spiritual masters, I thought of 10:9, machitta makita pranam, that they approach each other, and Krishna is very pleased with that, and he blesses them, tene brahma hridaye, that he gives them all enlightenment from within. So sometimes, you know, the association with each other, we don't always fully appreciate it. That I was wondering if you'd like to comment on that, because I was thinking that we take instructions, and then it's emphasizing the submissive part. So when you hear someone else talking and they're quoting different things, you can progress. So then the last part of the verse here, where it says, tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them, means because he's submissive, he's actually following, he's doing it, the vigyan stage, not just hearing gyan, but he's applying it, the abhideya of the relationship. So therefore, it's manifesting more thoroughly in him.
So you're speaking about tadvidhi pratipasthena, the production of the gyanam, then the next tadvidhashana. So that Krishna makes it very clear there what the duty of the those who are pursuing spiritual life, they're at there. And then it's clarified further, that's text 34 from chapter 4. The next verse, 35 and purport, they clarify it completely, and that is that the process of spiritual life, it's dependent on an affectionate relationship. You know, there's a reference in the Bhagavatam that says that the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master is one of firm friendship. The mother, Prabhupada Priya, she gave the whole scientific class based on friendship with Krishna. So Krishna is revealing the depth of confidentiality to Arjuna on the battlefield in front of everyone, huh? Due to his friendship. You're a devotee and my friend. And therefore I will give you this advanced understanding. And then, because you are my very dear friend. And the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, the establishment of spiritual master and disciple is given. That no longer friendship is there. Submission of Arjuna to Krishna's authority is there. Oh yes, go ahead, please.
So, with hearing your statement, it reminded me of the second class devotee, not the third class who doesn't recognize different devotees, but the second class, he makes friends with the devotees, and that's the affectionate part. So he hears and he serves, because each devotee he represents is, he sees him carrying Krishna, because he loves Krishna at that stage. So he sees that the devotees are representing Krishna, which is another title that they give to a spiritual master or a guru, is that he's Krishna. He's always represent the real guru is Krishna, and then everybody who represents Krishna or presents Krishna's point, he's also considered that. So even on the second class position, the affection between the devotees is so essential.
You want me to make a comment about that?
Please.
Well, as I previously stated, this affectionate relationship between everyone, it's an essential bond. Not, it's actually what ties the hearts together. And what is this affection? It's when you dealing with the other person's heart of the matter, yeah? Because otherwise I have fondness for a certain type of food, but that food doesn't reciprocate with me except to give me some intestinal challenge. And I have some affection for some color, but that color doesn't do anything for me. But if I have an affection for a person, true affection for that person, then that person, the inner living being, has a capacity to re-express affection. In other words, this is the reciprocal relationship we have with Krishna is on a microcosmic level with every other living being. I'll give you a very small example. I don't know if it's appropriate or not. I mean, probably would probably term this a crude example. But I walked the other evening to a program, and on the way back, out of the darkness came a little cat, I mean a kitten. And I thought, oh, where the hell did this come from? And
speaking to
the mic. The little cat came out of the darkness and decided that it would make an attempt or a plea for its own life, that maybe my affection would be reciprocated with me. And I said, go away. Right? But then the cat continued to walk between my legs as I was going. I said, this is not an easy challenge for me, because I have affection immediately for every other living being. I naturally have affection. Unless, of course, some bug gets in my eye. I don't have a lot of affection for that. But the scalar cat kept walking, and I thought, how can I dispose of this cat in a way that's merciful? So as soon as I saw someone's fence in their house, I lift up the cat. The cat's purring the whole time, and just dropped him on the other side of the fence. So we have our limit, you know, how we can make our way in the material world and still do well for others. And it has to be executed with intelligence and with the immediate resources, right? And with affection. So the cat had an issue because it was purring, but it was placed within someone's yard so it wouldn't run into the road when I crossed the street. That was my purpose. And I would be free from the responsibility, because I'm an irresponsible person by nature, even for a cat. It would interfere with my freedom, having a cat. I have probably less stability in my life than the cat. At least the cat is in its own neighborhood. So I don't know if that's appropriate example or not. No? Okay. Do we have any time left? No, we're at 9 o'clock. That's enough. But I came across an amazing purport yesterday. I thought, this is such an amazing purport. Of course, I read it many, 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 many times, but somehow it just sprung out of the page, and I was like, wanted to share it with you. Where is it? Oh, yeah, here it is. This is text 49, purport from chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita, as it is, by the Vangresesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So listen to this. You have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of man. Now let it be finished. My devotee, be free again from all disturbances. With a peaceful mind, you can now see the form you desire. It's a very affectionate statement by Krishna. And the purport was incredible. Incredible. And I'll point out, if you have patience with me, why I thought it was so incredible. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was worried about killing Bhishma and Drona, his worshipful grandfather and master. But Krishna said that he need not be afraid of killing his grandfather. When the sons of Dhritarashtra disobeyed and disrobed Draupadi, in the assembly of Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent. And for such negligence of duty, they should be killed. That's what stopped me from. You see, if you don't act, if you engage in what's modern terminology, apathy, when there's an opportunity to act and you remain silent, and Krishna is providing this, he's circumstance, he's providence, he provides an opportunity for you to act in a righteous way, or at least intercede or try. He's promoting that you stay silent. Look at that. You deserve to be killed. Get that. That's pretty severe, don't you think? I thought so. Okay, thanks for your attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.